Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Nadeau. Hope you're having a great week, another show, another sit down, episode 62. We are here live another week, and I got to tell you, it seems like summer is here. The hot weather is upon us, at least here on the East Coast. I'm sure our guest today is already experiencing some hot weather as well. We'll get to him in just a second. Got a great show planned for you today. You know, I'm asked all the time, and it's probably the question I'm asked more than any question, and I'm sure our guest will agree. It's probably a question that if you follow mafia history, you follow anything about the mafia, the question we're asked all the time, what does the mafia look like today? What's the structure? Is there a commission? What does it look like? And how does it compare to the old one? We're going to talk about it today. What we're going to do, we're going to go through each active family or who we think is still active, kind of talk about what they're up to now, what they're doing, and talk about some of the names associated. The only show we've done on an active individual in the mafia, I believe this point would be Barney Bellomo. We did a show on him a while ago, who many believe is the head of the Genovese crime family. So we're going to talk about it today, have some fun, kick it around. As always, please subscribe to the show if you haven't. If you're just catching it for the first time, make sure you leave us a comment, a nice review, and make sure you follow us on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. Also, if you enjoy our mafia content and want more, make sure you go check us out on YouTube. Just search the Sit Down a Mafia History Podcast. Without further ado, though, let's bring on our guest. And we haven't spoken to our guest really since episode 2. Okay, we're 60 episodes later here on episode 62. And we're going to bring him back. I thought there's no one better than to talk about the current state of the mafia than one of the great mob writers in America. He has the Gangster Report, a great website about organized crime. He has the Original Gangsters podcast. He's written great books like Motor City Mafia, Mafia Prince, and others. It's our friend, Scott Bernstein. Scott, out in Detroit, how are you, buddy?
Good, man. Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be at episode 62 with you after, you know, helping, not, I don't want to say helping, you've done this all yourself, but, you know, participating in those first couple episodes and then being able to come back now when you guys have grown by leaps and bounds. It's impressive. And I tip my hat to you, sir.
Thank you, Scott. And you know, you're one of the, I think I remember joking with you on one of the shows we've done like live from then till now that I'm kind of your protege. And I mean that in all essence, you've turned into a friend, and you and I talk pretty frequently about the business, something that, you know, it's changed a lot, but you know, you're doing your thing. Your record speaks for itself. And, you know, at the end of the show, I kind of want to get into what you're up to now, but you know, you write about at the Gangster Report, you're really one of the only, really outside of Jerry Capisci, you're one of the only, and Cosa Nostra News, you're one of the only really people that still kind of report on the mafia today, you know, whether it's folks that die or just news about what's going on in the mob. I guess I kind of first want to just talk about how often are you asked about, is the mob still around? It's got to be the number one question, right?
Yeah, that and where Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
those are definitely the first two things that I'm asked. You know, I think people asking where the mafia stands today in America is a byproduct of what you just said about the lack of media coverage. And then there's also the byproduct, frankly, of 9/11, which was 20 years ago, but the priorities of the federal government completely shifted and turned on its ear. And the fact that the mafia has, for all intents and purposes, stopped killing people. I mean, not to say that dead bodies don't drop once in a while, but there's probably been, I would guess, roughly 20 mob murders in the last 20 years across all families. And if you compare that to, let's say, 1980 to 2000, as opposed to 2000 to 2020, you probably have, you know, hundreds and hundreds compared to the 20 that have been committed in the last 20 years. So when you stop dropping bodies, and the government's priority shift and the media's priority shift, you know, there's you know, optic The result is optically, it looks like there's nothing there.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think the pecking order really in general of where the mafia is in these cities now is so small. I mean, they're really down on the rung of kind of the people that are running the cities. Yes. You look back to the 70s and 80s, as you said, yes. You know, the people that ran these cities, whether it was Chicago or New York or wherever, it was the mob. I mean, they dominated everything. Now it's, you know, Latin gangs, it's black gangs, it's Asian gangs, it's these different groups.
Transnational.
It's a little bit of everything. So it's, I think, you know, you have to remember, as you alluded to, you know, the government did a particularly strong job of, whether it was the right way or the wrong way, bringing the mob down. I mean, they did a great job of really kind of extinguishing it, you know, not completely, but.
In a relatively short period of time.
Absolutely.
I mean, the RICO Act, which is, you know, that's the biggest weapon in the federal government's arsenal. Joey the Clown Lombardo, the famous Chicago mob consigliere, had the famous quote that, you know, you could convict a cheeseburger of a RICO. it's so easy. And RICO came into law, I want to say, in 72 or 73. But the government didn't really pick up on how to use it until the mid-80s. And in probably 15 years, with the use of RICO and then RICO resulting in an unprecedented amount of high-level mobsters turning government informant, it took what had been 50 years, 60 years in the making, and in less than two decades, really cut it down to size.
Yeah, I mean, when we really look at the commission, let's just say, and we look at, let's just say, the early 60s. Okay, you look back to where the commission was. The commission, according to FBI intelligence, had 26 bosses that sat on the commission. Now, they were run out of like the big five families, and then Chicago. But I mean, you had a boss in San Jose, you had a boss in Denver, you had a boss in Dallas. Yep. You obviously had the big five. You had all these different families. You look at today. So 26, let's say, in 1963, look, in the early 60s, the mob was at really its highest power point, really, for the most part.
Yes. And let me just add one thing in there. And I think this colors up your point. I would say that the mafia was at its peak in the early 60s, like you just said. And at that point, I don't think there was a single entity, maybe even including the U.S. government, the judicial system, that was more powerful than the mafia. And it's exemplified by the fact that I firmly believe, and it would be very difficult to remove me from this belief, that the mafia got a president elected. And then they assassinated the president.
Right.
So it just shows you how powerful they were at that point. And yes, right now, even though I'm, again, just as firm in telling people and reporting the mafia is still alive, it hasn't died, but it's a shadow of its former self.
Yeah, I mean, you look at 59 years later from 1963, when the FBI released their intelligence of where they believed the commission was and who was running it and who were running these cities, you basically have cut it in half, below half, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you figure, and we're going to go through each today, you know, and you and I, it's funny because I know you and I kind of, in a way, almost disagree. And I think for us, and the big question, when you're looking at the active families, look, you're going to have the five and you're going to have a few others. But I guess the question now is, what is considered a family? Is a family considered, you know, just several people, or is it, you know, anyone that's making money in the city that has, like, is it an 80-year-old guy that has, you know, connections to someone years ago? Is that a family?
Right. I think a perfect example would be a couple months ago, or maybe at some point in the last year, Sonny Cianciuti died.
Right.
Sonny Cianciuti was the last known boss of Pittsburgh.
Right.
But just because there was a guy that had one time been the boss in Pittsburgh was alive, it would give the impression that there was some organization that he was leading. And that just wasn't the case. So there was a Pittsburgh mob boss for all intents and purposes, but there was no family.
I think you made a great point, you know, a few minutes ago, where you kind of talked about just you know, the mob has kind of not killed them. They don't kill anyone anymore. Yeah. And for you know, kind of to break off more into that, the mob has went underground. The mob wants yes. many of us to believe that they're gone and no one's around. You know, that's where they feel comfortable. And that's where I think the mob in the 80s and 90s got out of control, because it was on Front Street. It was Nicky Scarpa yes. killing people. It was John Gotti in his suits. It was, you know, making it a public thing. And that's, as we know, just not where it's capable. I do want to ask you, Scott, before we get into the actual families itself, the big arcing question is, obviously the mob will never get back to where it was, let's say in the early 60s or the 70s. Do you think 10 years from now, do you think the mob's stronger or the same as it is now, or even more knocked?
I think it's ever evolving. And I agree with you with your assessment that they've gone kind of underground into the shadows. But I think there's another part and parcel to that, is that they've diversified and integrated, vertically integrated. And there's a lot of rackets being done, you know, virtually online, in the boardrooms, the white collar stuff, that still make a lot of money without nearly the amount of headache. And I think there's a lot of families that are making a lot of money that way. So the money's still flowing. I think it's the power dynamic is definitely a lot different, and the numbers are a lot smaller, and the reach is a lot. You know, at one point the mafia's reach was so wide and so vast, and now it's not.
I think something you also have to realize is, you know, when I look at, you know, it's occasionally you'll see where these, you know, a Black Hand form or some of these sites will put out what they think is a commission chart, and they're all generally pretty good. I mean, they put out kind of some of the active people still around, whatever. But you know, one thing you notice, and really, I mean, I feel like you and I know probably, you know, 90% of the people that are active today that are at least soldiers in the families. And what do we know? What's the common theme? They're all very old.
Yeah. There isn't a huge younger generation.
Yeah. And that's as we know, a problem. I mean, you don't have, you know, I'll take this.
You don't have the recruiting bases.
No. And I'll take, you know, a comment that your old friend, George Anastasia, always brings up. You know, back in the day, you know, if you were growing up in the 50s, you know, the guys that were 30 and 40 in the 80s, they were taught, you know, a different way of life than the kids today. I mean, kids today that are Italian want to become, as George would say, you know, doctors and lawyers and people that, you know, are making real money. They want to get into crypto, or they want to get into hedge funds. They want to make real money.
Yeah, they want to be the next Zuckerberg. They want to be the next Zuckerberg.
Absolutely. Or, they don't want to be the next
Elon Musk. They don't want to be the next Gotti. Yeah.
Right. And the people that do want to be those folks, like, let's just bring up an individual like Peter Tuccio.
Yeah.
You know, they're really scraping the bottom of the gene pool, as we know. So
yes, they're scraping the bottom of the gene pool. That is definitely true. But I will say, if you're someone like a Peter Tuccio, for the insiders, they know that Peter Tuccio is this young 20-something New Yorker that has somehow in the last five, six, seven years, finagled his way into three separate crime families activities. And now is about to go do 8 years in prison. I sense that for someone like Pete Tuccio, the trajectory that he has right now would have never existed before. And like you said, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. Pete Tuccio, all due respect to Pete Tuccio, I have no idea what he's like as a person or as a racketeer or anything, but I just sense he's going to go into prison at 28. He's going to come out at 35, and he's going to be fast tracked.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, that's a good point, because I think at the end of the day, while we will make the case that there are a lot of old guys, there are still a lot of young dudes, and a lot of them are in prison and they're going to get out eventually. I'm not going to name those people, but we've talked about them. We've talked about them on YouTube, but it's really kind of an itching things to kick around. But I want to start, Scott, with kind of going through some of these families, kind of where they are. I want to start with the, you know, what was the kind of the insular patriarchal crime family, the Boston crime family, if you will, the mafia out of the city of Boston. And look, as we know, the headlines would come really from history, from groups like the Winter Hill Gang. not a lot of people truly know about, you know, the Gennaro Angiulos, the Raymond Patriarcas, the different, you know, groups. But, you know,
Whitey Bulger took a lot of oxygen out of the room.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you're talking about coverage of New England underworld.
He absolutely did. But when we look really since the late 90s, really since, you know, actually since Raymond Patriarca, quite honestly, there have been some interesting storylines in Boston. You had, you know, guys like, you know, Baby Shaqs in the 90s and 2000s, you know, Peter Lamone. Now you have the Cheese Man who, you know, is in and out of jail. What does the Boston mob look like today, in your opinion?
Well, so I'll say that I think Boston specifically right now is actually pretty healthy. But the Patriarca crime family is a New England crime family. So although Boston is its epicenter, they have traditionally had a large presence in Providence as well. And I would say that the Providence wing of the New England crime family is on its last legs. There are very, very few, unless there have been guys made that we don't know about, there are very few made guys left in Providence, but there are still a lot of made guys left in Boston. So the power, which had been in Providence really for the majority of that family's life cycle, because Patriarca was from Providence, Baby Shaqs is from Providence. He's retired, but he's still alive. He's like 93 or 94. But right now the power is in Boston with the D'Annunzio brothers. You said Big Cheese, Carmen D'Annunzio, his younger brother, the Little Cheese, Anthony D'Annunzio. They have a social club in the North End, which is their, you know, their Little Italy, called the Gemini Social Club. And I would say that the majority of Patriarca crime family activities in 2022 are being run out of that Gemini Social Club.
And as we know, the Cheese Man, he's a guy that, you know, obviously gets his name. He had a cheese company, you know, on Endicott Street and yep. in Boston in the North End. And, you know, he's fought some charges. He did some prison time, came out in mid-2010s. You know, he's really just been kind of hanging out ever since. You mentioned, you know, Matty Guglielmetti. You know, he's old. He does have a son.
Right. So Matty's run, from my research and reporting, Matty is running Providence right now. He is either the underboss or the consigliere of the Patriarcas, probably number two in the organization beneath D'Annunzio. I have heard some rumblings in the last year that there is possibly someone above D'Annunzio right now. I haven't heard a name. I mean, the name that I would throw out there as my guess would be a guy by the name of Anthony Spagnuolo, who they call Spucky. Spucky was acting boss for D'Annunzio when D'Annunzio was locked up, went to prison himself, and is now back out. A guy that traces his roots back to the Angiulos back in the 70s and 80s. So, and I will say about Boston from my research, there's a faction of younger guys in the Patriarcas that are, you know, probably a bit of an anomaly for other regional crime families that aren't New York City. One of them is D'Annunzio's kid, who I think is in his 30s, who's the rumors already got his button. And then there's a couple.
You're talking about Louie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Anthony's kid, I think. But I
right,
I,
okay, it's nephew, yeah. Right, okay. And then there's a couple young guys, Tori Marino, Johnny Scarpelli. Again, this is all alleged.
Yeah, absolutely.
That are, you know, I think they're about 45. 46 that are kind of running that younger crew that had been groomed by D'Annunzio and those guys.
Yeah, definitely an interesting group. I know Spucky Spagnuolo, he spent a lot of time in prison.
Yeah.
But, you know, all these guys, you know, just kind of got out around the same time in 2015, 2017. And they have a big, vast kind of area, you know, Providence, as you mentioned, Boston, you know, a lot of area.
Maine, I don't, they control whatever's going on in Maine.
Yep.
Absolutely. New Hampshire.
Absolutely.
Not that there's a ton of rackets up there, but yeah. Whatever racket. And then I will also add, when you're talking about the Patriarcas modern day, to keep an eye on, keep a eye out for outside of Matty Guglielmetti, out of Rhode Island, there's a old school capo by the name of Little Eddie Lato, who is the target of an ongoing murder investigation tied to an unsolved or partially unsolved 1992 gangland hit in Federal Hill, which is Providence's Little Italy, an Irish enforcer named Kevin Hanrahan. And a couple of the people that were involved in that have flipped. And I know that Eddie Lato has been fingered in front of a grand jury as being part of the two-man hit team that killed Hanrahan. And Lato's been got out of prison, I want to say, in like 2018-ish. And has had this kind of cloud over his head that there's the potential he could be indicted for what happened in 92 with Hanrahan.
I'll tell you, Scott, there's one thing I can tell you about Boston and Providence, and I'll always say this. I think they lead the league as far as mafia nicknames or alleged nicknames. I mean, you've got some terrific nicknames. I mean, listen to some of these. The Cheese Man, Good Looking Maddie, Vinny the Animal, Freddy the Neighbor, Fat Boy, Ponytail Tony.
I think Fat Boy was actually Fat Greg. That's Greg Costa, who's one of D'Annunzio's guys.
You got the Ox. You got Baby Cheese, Tea Party,
Baby Shaq. Baby Shaq could be the greatest boss nickname of all time.
Yeah, I mean, you just got some great nicknames, but you know,
nobody knows where it comes from. There's
a lot of people have said it has to do with his love for women, but
that he used to shack up a lot. Yeah. There's other people say it was Baby Shanks because he used to carry like a knife with him.
Yeah, right. But yes, Boston, somewhat alive and well, even in the province as well.
One more thing to add, Vinny the Animal Farrar, who you just referenced, is back in the news as of the last month or two. It looked like he was retired. He was a guy that back in the 80s was looked at as the future of the crime family. He was in his 30s at that point. He was being groomed by Angiulo and some of the other big figures in the Boston mob. He's a rarity in that he has a business degree from Boston College. He's very, very savvy, intelligent racketeer, or at least when he was convicted back in the early 90s. But he came out of prison in about 05-06, and everyone kind of has been under the belief that he's not involved. But it just came out in the last couple months that the state police in Massachusetts have him as the main figure in a probe into racketeering in the suburbs of Boston, not Boston proper, but out in Norfolk County. So the feds confiscated about $250,000 from him last fall. He was fighting in court to try to get the money back. And just a couple weeks ago, the court said, the judge said, we believe, the state of Massachusetts believes that money came from racketeering. So you're never going to get it back. And there's a chance you might be indicted some point in the near future. So those are a couple headlines to keep an eye out there. Eddie Lato in Providence and Vinny the Animal in Boston.
Yeah, you know, Norfolk County, kind of south of Boston, a lot of trendy, nice places out there. Quincy, Braintree, Foxborough, where the Patriots plays out there, as far as I know. So, yeah, definitely. Aaron Hernandez lived in that area, I believe.
Yeah. Vinny,
just between Boston and Providence.
Vinny's, just again, based on my reporting, I've never seen Vinny's tax returns or his financial, but I've just been told that he is super, super invested in legitimate real estate deals and parkings. If you've ever been to the North End, it's very tight.
Yep.
I mean, literally, the streets are so narrow. And parking is at such a premium. And I've been told that he has some huge chunk of the legitimately, not in any illegal capacity, that he owns a bunch of the parking structures in the North End, and that he's just gotten ridiculously rich off that in the last 20 years.
That'll do it. Parking is a moneymaker, as we know. Buffalo is an interesting place. A lot of people for years thought kind of Buffalo was maybe extinct or defunct, but with the closeness of Canada, obviously Hamilton and Montreal. You know, Canada's always kind of kept Buffalo going. We know Buffalo has always had the Todaros around. We go back way back to Magadino, who was obviously blood with Mr. Bonanno. You had, you know, people like John Montagna, high-end people there. But for years, it's been under the leadership, as far as we know, of Joe Todaro Jr. Now, Joe Todaro is one of those interesting people. Never been arrested, never went to prison. His father was a guy that really didn't go to prison ever. And you look at Joe Todaro, he's made a ton of money in that La Nova Pizzeria franchise around Boston. And
him and Buffalo, but between him and his dad, Lead Pipe Joe, who was senior, and Big Joe, who's junior, you could point to them as almost personally responsible for marketing Buffalo Wings. I mean, that's a pretty big impact you've made outside of the mafia, just in pop culture.
Yeah, so I kind of want to mention what you're saying there. So my old boss, Dave Portnoy, who a lot of people know, and I talked about this in a video I did about Joe Todaro. Joe Todaro is very out there in the public. He does interviews, does charity work, a lot of stuff. And my old boss actually did a pizza review at La Nova and unwittingly got Joe Todaro on camera for a long period of time. And I always tell a colleague of ours, RJ Roger, I always tell him about this, that this was one of the better pieces of mob content. And we didn't even know it was mob content.
Right.
And Joe Todaro is sitting there telling him about the wings and the pizza, and he takes him around the restaurant. And, you know, I think Dave kind of just doesn't even know who he is, really, just assumes.
And he said he made some joke about the mafia, not even realizing who he was talking to. And then Joe Todaro says, yeah, we don't use that word in here.
Yeah. He kind of laughed. He's like, we don't say that. It's like, but, you know, Joe Todaro is making a lot of money. There's a lot of connections to Canada still. From what I understand, a lot of control over a lot of those small little areas up there. Boston's still kind of a nice city for crime as far as mob crime.
So right now you have a situation in Buffalo that is very explosive. And when I say that, I mean that there are multiple federal and local investigations into organized crime related to the Todaro organization, the alleged Todaro organization. They are encircling him and picking off people close to him, including his nephews.
Right.
And his underboss, or his alleged underboss, a guy by the name of Don Violi, who traces his roots to the Montreal Mafia. His dad was assassinated in the 1970s, and he had to take refuge in Hamilton, which is right next to Buffalo. So when you cross the Canadian border from Buffalo, you're in Hamilton or Niagara. And Violi was caught. And this is really what blew the lid off of this notion that Buffalo Mafia was extinct. Don Violi was caught on a wire, I believe in 2016, but I don't think the wire was made public maybe till 17. And he's caught on a wire telling an undercover that I'm the underboss of the Buffalo Mafia. Joe Todaro Jr. brought me down to Florida for a ceremony to make me the underboss. And I was chosen over 30 other people. So that either means that there were 30 people up for the underboss job, which I don't think is the case. I think it's more like he's saying that the organization, Buffalo organization, is 30 main guys, which even if that number holds true, there were people on these, you know, internet chat forums and whatnot as of 3 years ago saying Buffalo Mafia was dead. There was nobody left. Now we have an underboss, according to the federal government. He's convicted of being the underboss. I believe he just got out of prison recently, just got paroled. And he's saying that we got 30 guys and Joe Todaro was the boss and he made me underboss. So
still
it really
still a machine, quite honestly. They still have, you know, plenty of guys around, plenty of people still doing things, a lot of money coming in. And with the connection to Canada, there's still a lot of, you know, things to be made there.
There were just some really interesting tidbits to come out of these investigations. One of them being the fact that I'm blanking on the guy's name, but just recently pled guilty to drug trafficking, and he was a high school football coach,
Michael Maseki.
Who people were claiming could have been a made guy.
Yeah.
And this guy was coaching football at a local Buffalo high school.
Yeah, he was a teacher. It's like a 20-year teacher.
At the Buffalo school. Todaro's nephews own a strip club called Pharaoh's, which is like the main strip club out in that area. And there's a former DEA agent that is under indictment right now, alleged to have been taking bribes and helping certain members of this Todaro circle with various issues. It's not even a belief. There's the fact that the head of the Outlaws motorcycle gang, not just for New York, but the person who is now supposed to be the boss of the entire international Outlaws organization, I believe his name is John Ermine. They call him Tommy O. And he is the head of security at the strip club.
Right.
So that puts him in direct proximity to Todaro. Like you said, Todaro's never been convicted or indicted. Now, he has been ejected from his union post at the LINU or LAUN, Laborers International or whatever. He was booted in the late 90s for organized crime associations or connections. So yeah, there is some record of his associations.
A family still flying a machine, one that's still very much there, and we don't talk about much, but Todaro's still running a pretty good ship. As I said, never been arrested. Pretty impressive. Let me ask you, Scott.
Let me just share one quick anecdote that I found interesting from talking to Sammy Gravano once, talking about Todaro Jr. and how he conducts business, or how him and his dad conducted business, because his dad was Lead Pipe Joe was allegedly the boss from the early 80s until he died in the mid to late 2000s, when Big Joe allegedly went from under boss to boss. Sammy Gravano talks about taking meetings with these guys in Florida and then forcing him to go into the ocean on the beach, and that they're holding meetings, a mile into the Atlantic Ocean.
Very secretive, right?
Yeah,
that's interesting. I never heard that story actually, but yeah. But yeah, I'll ask you. Give me one word answer: yes or no. Will Joe Todaro do prison time in his lifetime?
No.
I agree. Joe Todaro is, I believe, maybe
75. Yeah.
He doesn't have too long left, but. Definitely interesting to think about. Okay, let's go to your favorite town. And Scott, please, we don't have 6 hours to talk about the entire history of Detroit. But I do want to talk about a family that, a lot of people, I think, interestingly enough, you're the king of the Detroit mafia history. And the partnership is one that has been very successful. They have luckily have not had to deal with many of the little things that run around, rats.
There's only been one guy.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. The names Jackalone have been integral to the Detroit mob for years. The Toco name, the Girilli name. What does the current leadership of Detroit look like now?
So you have a triumvirate, if you will, of leaders. You have the alleged boss, Jackie Jackalone, who was the son of Billy Jackalone and the nephew of Tony Jackalone. The Jackalone brothers were the street bosses of the Detroit mob from the late 50s all the way into the 2000s. They were the guys that most likely killed Jimmy Hoffa.
What kind of guy is he, Jackie?
Jackie is, unfortunately, he didn't, his dad was beloved. Billy was the good cop. Tony was the bad cop. And Jackie kind of has inherited some of the worst characteristics of his dad and his uncle instead of the best characteristics. He's not incredibly beloved. He's definitely respected, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's feared. I mean, he's feared in the sense that he's a mob boss and I believe he's ordered murders. I don't believe he's someone who's gotten his hands that dirty in those murders. So, you know, he was someone that was groomed for the position for a long time. There's wiretaps from back in the late 80s, early 90s about how it had already kind of been decided at that point that Jackie would take over eventually. So, you know, he's a guy that was kind of a boss in waiting for a good maybe 20 years, 15, 20 years being groomed for that spot. He was a street boss before he became boss. And that was really kind of when he was in his glory, honestly, between around 2000 and 2012. He became boss in 14. But, you know, Jackie's had a rough decade. And his time as boss has probably been the worst time of his life because of several very close personal issues that he's had. And I wouldn't even bring it up if it hadn't been in the paper because of a lawsuit. I stayed away from reporting on it. Jackie's daughter, Chantel, who was a actress and a model out in LA, had a allergic reaction to a peanut back in 2013 and has been on life support ever since. Just a true tragedy. I knew her a little bit. I can't say I was good friends with her, but just a beautiful soul that was Jackie's little girl. And is on life support in his living room. So that's taken quite an emotional toll on him. And then his dad and his best friend, Alan Hilf, and his dad, Billy, both died in the same year. So it's been a tough last 8 years since Jackie became boss. So he's got the mantle of power, but I don't think he's been able to enjoy it. The guys beneath him are really kind of the more day-to-day overseers of what's going on in the streets. Jackie is smart, taking a page out of the bosses before him, where street boss and underboss kind of control the day-to-day, and the boss kind of stays away from anything that's, you know, day-to-day activity and just is there to chime in on policy, take an envelope, so forth. So Anthony LaPiana, AKA Chicago Tony, is alleged to be the underboss. And Peter Tocco, who was Jack Tocco's nephew, and LaPiana was Jack Tocco's nephew via marriage. This was the guy that led the family for 35 years before Jackie Jackalone. And the street on a day-to-day basis is alleged to be run by LaPiana and Pete Tocco.
Now, are they really taking the page out of most of the family's books and doing a lot of, what are their, you know, terms of, Are there industries out there that we don't see maybe in other places? What are they doing to make
LaPiana is the white collar guy. Mm-hmm. He's probably one of the most successful white collar mob figures of the last half century. He's connected to every family, every mafia figure in the country, knows Lop and has a lot of respect for Lop. He in the last 5, 6, 7 years, he sold his life insurance business for $50 million. He is, you know, the definition of a diversified mob figure. And he's kind of been he's set the tone for where Detroit has gone. And it's not unintentional. Jack Tocco wanted the family to take this posture, this profile of a family that is, you know, more white collar than blue collar, and LaPiana has helped them achieve that. Jackie's the more blue collar. Pete Tocco kind of has a foot in both camps, and he is someone like LaPiana has taken the family into the 21st century, and taken a lot of the street rackets and put them online, and he's making a lot of money doing things that aren't your traditional street rackets.
Definitely a smart way to do things. Chicago is a place that I wanted to kind of talk about because we know kind of the success it's had over the years with guys like Paul Rica and Tony Accardo and Sam Giancana and Joey Dove Zayupa and your guys like John DeFranzo, just all sorts of quality. We know how successful they were in Vegas, and really were probably the most powerful syndicate in the country at one point. You know, the outfit, like everyone else, has really went behind the scenes. It's interesting. Mob informant Frank Calabrese Jr. recently appeared on a podcast and said that, in his opinion, which, again, I don't know how much stock we're putting into that. In his opinion, he said that, according to him, the Chicago Mob is just not really much of a mob. They've all went into legitimate business, and they're just tired of being kind of hit by the government, and they've moved on. You know, obviously, the feds would allege that, you know, Sally D. Laurentiis is the boss. I'll be the Falcon Bean is your kind of street guy on the street.
And Jimmy I is another big name.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on what Mr. Calabrese Jr. is saying?
I think it's an optics thing. I don't doubt that when Frank Calabrese Jr. looks at what the outfit is right now, compared to when him and his dad were on the street in the early 90s, it definitely looks a lot different and operates a lot different. There's no question. And just like Detroit, and let me be, again, clear about LaPiana's influence. LaPiana is from Chicago, so he is someone that has had an influence on how Chicago does business as well. Just like Detroit, Chicago has diversified. And there's a lot of stuff going on that isn't going on the street in that traditional racket capacity. So is it there? Yeah, I think it's there. Is it still active and functioning and in a lot of the areas that they were active and functioning before? Yeah. Is it different in a lot of areas? Yeah. Is order of operation and hierarchically, I don't know if that's a word, hierarchical, is it a little bit different again? Yeah, it is. Is the power right now, and is it shrinking? Like Elmwood Park, which was always a huge juggernaut of the crew, because that was where the DeFranzos were from. The DeFranzos are both dead now, Petey and John. And there's rumors that, you know, Elmwood Park has been folded up and, you know, put into Cicero or put into Grand Avenue in the same way that 20 years ago, the North Side crew was folded up and put into the West Side Grand Avenue crew. So, yeah, things are consolidating. But I've also been told from people that I trust that although there is not a huge young faction, there is a group of guys that hail from the Cicero crew.
And C-notes, I don't know. Guys?
What do you say?
C-notes?
C-notes are kind of like a JV mafia.
Yeah, like your farm team.
They feed more into Grand Avenue than Cicero. These Cicero guys, I'm told, are all guys that came up under Mike Sarno in the 2000s when they were in their 30s. These are guys that are now probably in their early 50s. And that Sarno groomed a bunch of younger guys that he made personally, made in the sense of inducted. And that a lot of these guys are the type of racketeers that I've been explaining as kind of the new mob in the 21st century, is not traditional loan sharks or bookies, but guys that make money illegally in other online white collar ventures. And that, you know, those that that's kind of the lifeblood of the family right now. This group of maybe 10 to 20 younger guys in their 50s from Cicero that are kind of giving the family a makeover. And then you have the OGs that you've mentioned, Sally De Laurentiis, who's supposed to be kind of that new DeFranzo role or the, which is before that was the Accardo role, which was you're the boss, but it's more of a advisory role than a day-to-day role. And then on a day-to-day, you got, you know, guys like Albie Vina and Jimmy Iandino, who are, again, I mean, these guys are seasoned gangsters. And I use the word gangsters. They're not racketeers. They're gangsters.
Absolutely. You mentioned Mike Sarno doing a 25-year bid right now, gets out in around 2032. So it'll be interesting when he comes home. A lot of his guys are still in the street. Didn't he move around at one point? Wasn't he working with BJ Jehoda on something?
BJ Jehoda was a cooperator who had started, or I shouldn't say started, but I would say ended his mob career as a driver for Solly De Laurentiis. And Sarno was the guy that was under De Laurentiis. So he would have worked with Jehoda in the early 90s, late 80s.
Absolutely. I want to kind of, you know, move on, I think, from really this part of the country. You know, you look at really outside of that, you know, even west from Chicago, not a lot left. You know, you look at places like, you know, on the West Coast. I mean, there's no mob in Las Vegas anymore. There's no mob in, you know, San Francisco or San Jose or San Diego or Denver. You know, I've heard, you know, I know you've mentioned to me, you think that there's some sort of group in L.A. I think more of it, it's got to do with more ethnic groups.
I think when it comes to L.A., and then I can talk about what I said about Kansas City and Cleveland, because I think that is actually probably more of a, what I would say, a group. I don't know if L.A. is a group. I know that L.A. has a handful of made guys.
But Scott, let me ask you, do you think that just is more of just fringe guys from just like other New York families just moved out there?
Yes. A lot of the guys that were inducted into the LA family in the last 25, or any guy that had been inducted into the LA family from the 90s forward, were guys I think that came from New York.
Right. Like Tommy Gambino and people like that.
Yeah. So the, you know, the two names you hear out there, Tommy Gambino, who his father was a Cherry Hill Gambino. And you know, if there is a boss right now in LA, people would probably say it's Tommy Gambino. Again, I don't think there's an organization per se, but I think there are people from that were once part of an organization that are still around, that are still making a living on the streets. And there's some probably shared rackets without there being an organization.
And to me, that's not a family. I think it's just a couple of guys. And, you know, I think, you know, they have the reputation that, oh, at one point, you know, they have the name Gambino or the name whatever. Let me talk about Kansas City, because you and I have talked kind of glowingly about this. I'm one of these guys that, as I said, I don't consider like a couple of old guys that are like 80 or 90 that were close to Tuffy DeLoon at one point. You know, and maybe they made some money on the skim. Do we consider them a family? What do you know about Kansas City right now?
So Kansas City, I would say, is different than LA, but is nowhere near the functionality organization of any of the other groups that we mentioned. They have, like you said, a group of old timers, specifically Johnny Joe Sorrentino and Las Vegas Pete Simone, who are, you know, guys that have respect. Anywhere they went in the country, they have respect. You know, they could go to New York and I have no problem. I have no question they would be able to get an audience and a meeting with the main guys in New York. But that said, I don't think there's much of an organization there. I think there's more of a hierarchy in places like Cleveland and Kansas City than there is in LA.
Sure.
I still think there is some type of small, semi-active. We're kind of splitting hairs here. I don't know if the word organization is right or if it's a cell or it's.
What would you say? Let's say Kansas City. What would you say as far as how many members currently on the street?
Well, so like Kansas City, you're talking between 5 and 10, probably.
Yeah. So for me, like, and that's why, like, to me, I think there's like 10 active crime families in America. And for me, I'm just, you know, I don't know. I
would agree. I think if there's a truly functional organization, I think there needs to be 20 people plus.
Yeah, absolutely. I always, whenever I think of a Kansas City, obviously you think about Sabella and yeah. those guys. But
or Casino, or you think of the movie Casino.
Yeah, sure. But I think of that guy many years ago, Anthony Gizzo, who has one of those great lines at the Kefauver hearings where Senator asks him if he belongs to the mafia, and he responds, "What is the mafia? I don't know what the mafia is." Just a funny response, one of those old time guys. But, you know, an interesting thing, the one thing I remember about Kansas City recently, this is kind of random, but do you remember that guy, Michael Sam?
Yeah. So Michael Sam's boyfriend.
Yeah. He was
was related to the Camisanos, who are like the Jackalones of Kansas City.
I think Willie was his dad, I believe.
I think
possibly.
I think it was Willie's grandson.
Yeah, yeah. That was the last time I heard about the Kansas City mob, because I remember certain people were bringing up the fact that he was related to the Camisanos.
Yes,
it just was interesting.
So Willie the Rat Camisano, who took over for the Sevillas, and was a real tough SOB. They called him Willie the Rat because he used to leave bodies in the sewers with the rats.
Yeah.
His son, who's in his 70s now and allegedly was quite the sociopath back in the 70s and early 80s, you would think that there might be some, you know, these old timers that are in their 80s, you know, that little Willie could be someone that would be being groomed to take. But little Willie, even if that was in people's plans, a little Willie has been battling some serious health issues, got COVID, had like a stroke while he had COVID. The family's actually has a GoFundMe page to try to help fund his recovery. So any thoughts that the Sorrentino and Simone would just hand whatever was left off to little Willie is out the window. And then there's one younger guy that I've talked to the FBI in Kansas City, and they say there's one made guy that's semi young, and that's that's Pete Simone's kid, and they call him Joe Pete.
Gotcha.
Joe Pete Simone, and they believe that he was made in the late 90s. And he'd probably be in his mid to late 50s. I know he's kind of like, and this kind of speaks to what you're saying about who are these guys. And I think Joe Pete, even if he has a button, is someone who's like kind of a half of an actor and was like putting stuff up on YouTube. Like, so
very interesting.
Right.
And you're right about the GoFundMe. If you want to give to Willie Camisano Jr., they've made about 16 grand on the GoFundMe. It's still active if you'd like best, to give to it.
One of the greatest stories, really, in my opinion, probably one of the greatest mob stories, anecdotes of the last 30, 40 years. And I've written about it. And I know that Willie has seen my writings about it and wasn't thrilled, but you know, it is what it is. Willie allegedly killed his best friend over a golf debt. Went to a charity tournament in Vegas with this guy, a strip club owner named Roger Reed. They called him Jolly Roger. And this was back in 1988, I believe. And Camisano and Roger were a twosome, and they were betting on the hole by hole. And little Willie Camisano accrued a debt of about $180,000 to other bettors at this tournament in Vegas. And Roger, he tried to pawn it off on Roger Reed and say, "I'm not going to pay it. Roger's going to pay it." And Roger said, "I ain't paying it. It's your debt." And Roger ended up dead in a hotel room about 4 or 5 months after the golf tournament.
Pretty wild.
Yeah.
That seems just random, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you look at kind of the South. I mean, New Orleans is defunct, Tampa defunct, Dallas defunct.
New Orleans is definitely defunct, but I will say that I think there are New York families that have rackets going on down in New Orleans.
Oh, sure.
Columbos and the Gambinos.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up also in Florida. You got plenty of people down there still from Gambinos and some of the other families. We'll work our way up. Obviously, we haven't had people in Baltimore for many years. Youngstown, Pittsburgh, that area is kind of, now that some of the Lenny Strollos have passed away and some of the others, those families are pretty much defunct. Look, are there bookmakers and strip club owners out there? Absolutely. But there's no mafia. New Jersey, interesting place. The Cavalcanti crime family. Obviously, we know they're the real Sopranos, if you will. They've had a lot of strife over the years. Obviously, for years, they were dominated by guys like John Riggi. Really, since the 90s and Riggi going away, it's been kind of a mess. He had that board of like Vinnie Ocean and Charles Maggiore, and then it was, you know, Joe Miranda, and now it's back to Big Ears, who, according to the fans, for a while.
Yeah, and I think Joe Miranda might still be alive. He'd like be like 100, like 100, be the old, might be the oldest wise.
He's 99 in America. He actually died several years ago. But
okay, I take that back.
But he was in his 90s. It's hard to keep track sometimes.
I think New Jersey is still a functional organization.
I do agree as well. I agree.
They it's interesting sometimes when you look at where these guys headquarter out of, and a lot of times it's, you know, they have this place called the Ribera Social Club, and it's been like, you know, ground zero for the New Jersey mob dating back to Sam the Plumber, and it's because they all come from Ribera,
yeah,
in Italy or Sicily, and you know, it also makes it easier when you have that kind of situation, or there's another kind of a similar situation in Springfield, Massachusetts, at the Our Lady of Mount Carmel Social Club, which has been ground zero for the mob there for 50 plus years, is that if there's really one, I mean, in these, well, not New Jersey, that it's not a small town, but in Springfield, it's a small town. If there's really only one place that these guys all hang out at, you know, it's not difficult to index them, right? Like, you just, you know, park a surveillance van outside of the Ribera Social Club, and you can pretty much figure out who's still active and who's not active in the Cavalcanti crime family. And same with in Springfield, and that's a group that used to be a satellite wing of the Genovese crime family, and now is kind of a shadow of what that satellite wing used to be. But
the problem that New Jersey has is they have a lot of members in prison. You know, you look at you know, Charlie Stango's in prison, Jerry Bolzano's in prison, I believe. Jerry got arrested, Capo, I don't know if you remember, for that little stunt on one of the New Jersey highways where he attacked somebody. And but yeah, they, you know, a lot of guys that are just either locked up, you know, they got, you know, some of the Perna connections guys. There's a lot of families too that operate in New Jersey that are not
out of New Jersey, right?
Cavalcantes, you know, the Genovese, the Lucchese crime families. But I agree. I definitely would consider them still active. What would you say would be their membership? 30, 40, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say it's probably at around that 25 to 45 number.
Yeah.
I'd say Detroit right now is at 20 to 25. I'd say Chicago, I'd say 50,
yeah.
In New York, the five families, I'd say, you know, every family's,
well, don't 100. Get ahead of ourselves.
Okay, sorry.
we're gonna save them till the end. I want to ask you quickly, while we're still on the subject of New Jersey, Vinnie Ocean, who, you know, obviously interesting guy, you know, a lot of people believe Tony Soprano was somewhat based on him,
yeah.
You know, he was, you know, a guy that became a rat, kind of resurfaced a couple of years ago in Houston.
Houston, right. Running a strip club.
Yeah. Have you, I know you, you know, we all try to get our, you know, hooks into people and talk to people. Have you ever talked? Do you know what's going on with Vinny?
He, just like you said, you know, we see these guys now with the way that the social media is.
Yeah. Will he turn up?
It's not always that difficult to get a hold of some of these guys as you might think it would be. I definitely, I won't lie and say that over the last couple of years, I've tried to make some overtures in that direction, and I just have never hit pay dirt. And I haven't had the, you know, the contacts within law enforcement or other people that for me to get over to him. But yeah, I mean, the last we heard, he was in Houston. He was running a strip club. There was a picture of him. He looked pretty good. I mean, you know, physically, you know, at least, you know, aesthetically, he looked like he was in good shape. And it's not too much, not when, you know, when these guys can live that life and whack as many people as they, because back then they were clipping guys and can really get a get out of jail free card and go live the, go, you know, have a second chapter of your life. That I think that sometimes you see that in people, like that just like a guy that's in a leadership role for a long time, that for instance, I'm gonna throw it back to Detroit now, Jackie Giacalone. If you take a look, a picture of Jackie Giacalone from 2012 and a picture of Jackie Giacalone in 2022, the 10 years might as well have been 40, 50 years in terms of aging him. You look at a guy like Phil Leonetti or a guy like Vinny Ocean, guys that got out of the life by the time they were in their 40s or mid 40s. You look at them now in their mid 60s, they look great. There's no stress left.
Which crazy because it's funny you said, because like even like I couldn't believe this. Take a guess how old Vinny Ocean is.
70?
78?
Oh, he's old. I guess he's old. He's older than I thought. So he lasted until his mid-50s.
But it's funny. It's funny, Scott, because I did some research a few months back on Vinny Ocean, and I came across this wild article out of Houston. It was culturemap.com out of Houston. It was this woman that does, like, real estate news, and they did one of those goofy, like, hey, buy this house for sale. And it turns out it was this like $3.5 million mansion. And the article talks about it's the former home of a man called Vincent Cabello, whose new name is that of old Vincent Ocean, Palermo, former acting boss. And they show the house and it's like this incredible home. It's got like movie room and all these like Godfather posters, and that's the last I heard of Vinny Ocean. I haven't heard seen much.
Yep, neither have I. I know he got, there was some type of trouble that he got into, was how he was in the news.
Yeah,
someone was suing him or.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we have one more group, and then we'll get into the New York families, kind of where everybody's attention wants to be. It's Philadelphia. And, you know, you and I both, you know, definitely know a good amount about Philly. I mean, I live in this area. It's a colorful group of guys that, you know, I don't think we quite know who's in control.
They're a real unicorn of an organization, if however you want to categorize them. It's there's so much going on. Here's how I'll start it. If we're talking about Philadelphia numbers wise right now, like their numbers are pretty good. If you take into account the old school guys that were made by Scarfo in the 80s that are now back on the street, and the newer school guys that were made by either Legambi or Merlino or the people underneath them, you probably have numbers that are into the, you know, 40s, high, maybe high 40s with everybody.
Yeah, it's
now, real quick. That doesn't mean that everybody's active.
Right.
I'm just talking about guys that have a button. You're probably, you know, over the 40 mark in Philadelphia. Not everybody has a button. Or sorry, I shouldn't say that. I said not everybody's active just because they have a button. And as you know, and as anybody that's paying attention knows, there are like three different families within the one family.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, remember, what we're saying here is what the feds say. We're not saying this. This is what the feds say. The feds will tell you, I think in their opinion, they so desperately want the boss to be Joey Merlino. I don't buy it. And in fact, the wiretaps almost confirmed that, you know, Georgia Anastasia reported this, that at one point at a Christmas party in New York, Michael Lancelotti was introduced
as the guy that runs
quite, quote, the boss of Philadelphia.
Right.
You know, is he, look, Michael's a guy that really has, he's never been arrested. He lives a pretty,
he's been arrested. He's never been convicted. Well,
he's never been to jail for any long period of time. Has been, you know, kind of just nondescript, you know, lives in a row home, just a regular guy. You know, obviously you have guys that are involved in the indictment right now, Stevie and Sonny Mazzone. You got, you know, Dom Grandy involved in that as well, kind of an up and comer. What do you think Philly looks like? Is it, you know, as you said, it's definitely full of people, but.
Here's what I think, Joey. I mean, again, it's a unicorn. The whole, every aspect of the situation is a unicorn. I think the best analogy you can make with Joey in the 2020s is whether this is an exact analogy or not, is what a Cardo was for a long time in Chicago, which is a guy that is held in very high esteem, a guy, if he wanted to, could take the reins on a day-to-day basis, but wants to be removed, wants to be more than just arm's length removed, like wants to be as removed can be. I suspect still has a taste of things, but that's different than being a shot caller. Does his word still have weight? I believe it does. Is he the boss in the way that most people would think a boss operates? No. I think there are guys in Philadelphia that do play that role. The feds will tell you, Mikey Lancelotti, Georgie Borghese, Stevie Mazzone, Johnny Chang. None of that's been proven. Joe Legambi, who, we talked about this a little bit on a show I did with you with a live about, we're talking about the great bosses. To me, Joe Legambi is so underrated in terms of what he was able to do in Philadelphia and stabilize that regime and get the respect in New York. He did an amazing job for the 20 years that he was.
From what? And again, I'm asked this a lot. Who are my favorite guy? Look, I agree 100% wholeheartedly. I think, it's interesting. I was talking to a colleague of mine who, was recently come into contact with an old New York guy. And he talked about the fact that, even New York, everyone respects the hell out of Mr. Legambi. I know everyone down in South Philly does. I remember when I was a kid, he would get people jobs. He was just a real good guy, a neighborhood guy. Has this, nice row home, well kept. You always see him at the shore and stuff. Just a guy that no one can say a bad word about.
I remember asking Phil Leonetti when we were writing Mafia Prince, because I guess from someone that's an outsider, it kind of looked in the late 90s that Legambi, I don't want to say stumbled into the boss's seat, but got the boss's seat because there was no one left to be the boss. And almost like by accident. And I remember asking, again, that was perception. That doesn't mean that was reality. That was my perception, 25-year-old Scott or whatever. And I remember asking Phil, like, does it surprise, this was back in 2011 or 12. I remember, and I think Joe was under indictment at that point. I remember asking Phil, like, does it surprise you that Joe Legambi has been so successful as a boss? And he said, absolutely not. He's like, me and my uncle very early on saw that Joe Legambi had leadership capability and was someone that we were confident in. And if we went to, well, he ended up going to prison with them, but I guess they were talking back in 85, 86, if we went to prison, this is a guy that we could put out there and feel comfortable that he's taking care of what needs to be taken care of on the street. So obviously the people that made him, the people that brought him into the fold, and he was mentored by Chucky Merlino, Joey's dad, and they saw this in him, even if the public didn't see it.
Absolutely. Philly's still definitely active, still people here, still people doing things. But again, families, they're doing more lucrative things.
And the thing is, the Philadelphia or not, so you have the Joey guys, but then you also have all these Scarfo guys, and in that Scarfo camp is split in two. You got Phil Narducci, who's running a restaurant, and he'll tell you that he has nothing to do with anything, but the government nailed him on a loan sharking case recently, and that loan sharking case involved the
kind of bullshit though.
Yeah, but he still physically attacked this guy. Right. They got him on tape taking this dude's head and bashing it into a desk.
We have to remember those
guys. You got the Punch Brothers.
That guy, though, had a lot of issues in his own right.
Right. Yes. Yes. And then you have the Punches. And just like you said a second ago, I think that Phil and the Punches, irregardless if they're involved in organized crime, they're making a lot of money legitimately.
Yeah, absolutely. Home building and stuff. Sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into New York. We'll kind of wrap this thing up, kind of go through the five there. And I want to start with, obviously, many would agree, the Colombo crime family's dealt with a lot. You and I did a live about kind of the current state of the Colombo crime family. You look at really the leadership. I mean, the former boss, Moshe Russo, he died in April. You look at kind of the group under him. Benji Castalzo is under indictment from that one in 2021. He's under indictment. Rafty Mateo, the consigliere, is under indictment. Teddy Persico is locked up, a guy that I think a lot of people thought might be the heir apparent coming up. Joe Waverly just got out a couple of years ago. I think, you know, if you'd ask me who do I think is the boss of the Colombo crime family, I would lean on probably someone like Joe Waverly. But, you know, as we know with Joe Waverly, very dangerous individual, a lunatic, a guy that the feds would allege put a hit out on a cop. They weren't, you know, obviously ever really able to prove it. But, you know, a guy that definitely has a lot of, you know, panache and ability. But what do you think? What would the Colombo family be in 5 years? Who's running things?
I think Teddy Persico is the future of that family, whether he's on the street now or not.
Yep.
Carmine Persico with a lot of things. And there's a lot of negative things to say about him, but there's no doubt. When you're breaking down, you know, the positives, at least from a organized crime standpoint, he created and built and sustained what will forever be known as the last great mob dynasty.
Sure.
I don't think that these type of mob dynasties will exist anymore going forward because of what we said at the beginning of the show. You don't have the situations that you had for time immemorial in the mob where mobsters were bringing in their kids and then those kids were bringing in their kids. And you had these long lines of made guys, fathers, sons, nephews, cousins, uncles. And when you keep it, I mean, you saw Tony Soprano say this in The Sopranos, like, when you keep it just blood, it's a lot harder to pull apart. And Moshe Russo, if people don't know, you know, Andy Moshe Russo was Carmine Persico's first cousin. So he was a Russo, but he might as well have been a Persico.
Absolutely.
So they've kept that family together. Carmine Persico went to prison in 85. And kept that family together with his blood running that family until today.
When we look at the Bonanno crime family, I always say they're my favorite family to talk about really in history. Michael Mancuso, a lot of people would allege is the boss of the family, at least the feds would. Michael Mancuso got out of prison in 2019. He was actually just recently arrested for violating some of his supervised release for associating with felons. He, if you remember, was involved with that hit on Randy Pizzola, an associate on orders from Vinny Basciano.
Vinny Basciano, yeah.
Yeah, he did 15 years. Michael the Nose was a Purple Gang guy back in the day. They also have some pretty good leadership at the top, guys like Johnny Skyway, Palazzola. You know, Vinny Asaro is still around. I don't consider Vinny Asaro a guy that has much weight, very old at this point, has spent a lot of time in prison. You look at a lot of their leadership, at least from a capo standpoint. I mean, Ronnie Gialonzo's in jail. You know, little Anthony Pipitone's still around. What do you, at least in your opinion, what do they look like to you?
So let's use them as an example of that. Again, talking or comparing and contrasting, you know, the mafia from the elders, you know, the days of yore and now.
Hey,
and
Scott, let me ask you, yeah, Roku, let me interrupt just one quick second.
Yeah,
I want to ask you, it seems like all these families in New York, I made the case to a colleague recently that I think we can make the case that we don't know who the boss is in any of these families, quite honestly. Like they all have adopted this front boss kind of, kind of actual boss thing, because we could go five different ways with the Bonannos or the Lucchese's or whoever.
Yeah. But again, playing on what you're saying, though, I think this is emblematic of the time that we're in.
Right.
Is that in four of the five families, there's been leadership shifts and changes in the last two or three years. And one of them was because Carmine Persico just died, and we're all trying to figure out who's going to be leading the Columbos. But for the Lucchese's, for the Bananos, and for the Gambinos, the Gambinos, you had Frankie Boy Cali killed by a psycho that really had nothing to do with the mafia, but it still put the leadership up. There was an upheaval in the leadership. But with Lucchese and Bonanno, you had what would have been in the past violent faction wars, but because of the way things are done now in the 2010s and 2020s, they were bloodless coups to a degree. I mean, with the Lucchese's, you had Vic Amuso, who's kind of like a Carmine Persico, a guy that's been holding the reins from prison for the last 30 plus years. But he sent down an order that his boss, his underboss, and his consigliere all had to step down. And if they didn't, he was going to kill them. And they stepped down. With the Bananos, you had Mikey Mancuso, who was Mikey Knows, who was locked up. His consigliere and his underboss were on trial. This was 2 years ago. I think it was Tony Rubito and was it Lavaglio, Rubito, and there was one other guy. I'm blanking on who it is. But Mikey Mancuso was angry from prison reading the accounts of the trial because the defense attorneys were kind of using this gang that couldn't shoot straight type of narrative to try to get their clients off. And in that, Mancuso was offended. And according, this is all according to the great Jerry Capasi, he reported on the bloodless coup in the Lucchese's, and then he reported on this as well. After that trial, those guys, I believe, were acquitted. And Mancuso ordered them demoted because of the behavior of their attorneys at the trial.
It seems like Mancuso is kind of making decisions. Kind of seems like a leader, you will. He would kind of be my guess. Gambino crime family, strong group at this point. Obviously, they went through the Gotti reign. Had that mess for a while. But really, since Arnold Scutieri, there's been relative kind of calm. I guess in my opinion, if you ask me who's the guy, to me, it's Menino probably at the top of the group.
Menino and Cefalù, I think, are the guys that are – they lead the Sicilian wing of the family. Frankie Boy Cali was another integral part of that.
But you look at really though, the captains even, I mean, they have some strong captains here. I mean, even Concierge, Mickey Boy, you look at the captains. I mean, Top Tomato, Schiandra, Tommy Sneakers, Monk Sasano, Sonny Giuliano, John Rizzo, a lot of strong names.
Michael Rocket 40. That's the name I hear as a guy that is, he's in his early 50s now, or I hear this is the guy that in 10 years will be probably in a top administration post.
Yeah. A guy that, kind of came up in, did some prison time, did his thing, learned a little bit. I think part of that Al Trucchio group.
Yeah.
Way back, but yeah, they have a strong group. I mean, still have, Andy Campos.
Yeah, so that's another guy. So I think Sonny Campos, and a guy like Rocco 40, those two guys are the future. I don't know how old Menino is. Menino's not that old, is he?
Nah, I think he's like late 50s. But it's interesting because, as we know with Campos, like, he's not even fully Italian.
Right, he's Puerto Rican.
Like, a lot of people don't realize that. But I'm always...
Huge earner.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, him and Tori Lacasio made, millions of dollars. But, yeah, I mean, really a group of guys. A lot of strong names here.
He was Puffy Combs' quarterback in high school.
Yep, absolutely. Hey, let me ask you real quick, and I'm just speculating here. I get this question all the time, when we talk about these old guys. What is, obviously I think we can allege, guys like Jackie Knows, Gene Gotti, they're all kind of just retired, just living their lives. But we saw an interesting name recently get out of prison, Joe Watts.
Yeah.
What do you think he's up to, Joe Watts? Do you think he's just kind of living out
his life? He's old, right? He'd be in his mid-80s now.
He's in his 80s, yeah.
I mean, Joe Watts, for people who don't know, Joe the German Watts, I mean, this was like the Gambino's version of Jimmy the Gent Burke.
Yeah,
he's from the Lucchese's. Just a guy that was not a made guy, but was as respected and as influential as most made guys, and as a guy that if he had been Italian, would have risen high and fast. Was an earner, was a hitter. You know, when you're, you know, I call it the trifecta. If you're someone that is popular, an earner, and a hitter, I mean, that's the triple crown.
Which will be talking about on this show all the time. If you can be all those, you're going to be a legend. You
know? Yeah. I think Joe Watts checks all those boxes as an associate. I mean, I don't know how much I think it would depend on how active, and this is up for speculation. I mean, how active is Gene Gotti and Jackie Knows? I mean,
I don't know.
Well, okay. So let's just say they're not active. Well, that's Joe Watts's. Those are Joe Watts's people.
Yeah, I think
I have no idea what Joe Watts's connection to Cefalù and the Sicilians were before he went away.
I've always said I think all these old guys, they just want to live their life in relative anonymity. I mean, even like a Vinny Asaro. I mean, Vinny Asaro stepped his feet into this new game and got involved with people like Gene Borello and decided, you know what? Let me just try to live out my life. I'll take a couple of loan sharking tributes and just try to live my life out. Genovese crime family, who many would argue is the top mob family in the entire country.
I subscribe to that.
Yeah, even though I do think the Gambinos, I think at this point are if you're talking to me like sports teams on paper, I think the Gambino crime family is more impressive personally. But when we look at the Genovese crime family, a lot of people would believe that the boss of this family is Barney Bellomo. He's been around forever, prodigy. We did a show on him. I'm under belief that the person that actually makes the moves in the street is Michael Ragusa. Not a lot of people don't know much about Michael Ragusa, but they have a strong group as well. I mean, Ernie Muscarella, they did have a couple of pinches recently. Nick Calisi and Ralph Balsamo, two Bronx capos, got jammed up. Uncle Patty Falchetti took a couple of beefs recently. Patsy Perella just got out. But a lot of strong guys, a lot of higher-end guys. You've got a lot of their guys in Manhattan, John Brescio, people like that. You know, pizza kings, you know, guys that have made legitimate incomes.
I think that the Genovese, I do subscribe to the belief that they're, you know, the Cadillac or the Ivy League of organized crime. They have been for a while. I don't think that's changed. And I think numbers-wise, they're probably at I think they're at 200, maybe a little bit over 200. I think there are most families in New York out of the five families, I think they range between 100 and 200 with the Genovese, the Gambinos, and one of the other ones kind of leaning closer to the 150 to 200 mark. And then I think the Bananos and maybe the Lucchese's are leaning further, 150 to 100. But you know, it's probably at its peak in the 60s and 70s. You know, you probably had thousands of made guys in New York. Now you might have, you know, 800 to 1,000 if you're lucky. Definitely the numbers have gone down. But yeah, Barney Bellomo, just like we were just saying about the Genovese being this kind of the gold standard. And I think Barney Bellomo is the gold standard for bosses, American La Cosa Nostra shot callers, whether or not he's the ultimate overlord godfather or not. Mickey Ragusa, a guy that's a sleeper and a real powerhouse in his own right.
A recent photo just dropped of Bellomo. I saw, I don't know where that was from, but we don't, there's not much in the hands of photos with either of those two. So,
yep. And again, in an era where it's incredibly easy to track photos of these guys, I have nothing but respect for a guy like Barney Bellomo, who's clearly put out an edict to everybody to refrain from posting pictures of him on any social media platforms. And in Detroit, LaPiana has done the same thing, and it's almost impossible to get a photo of this guy. I have a bunch of photos of LaPiana from the 70s, 80s, and 90s, but I don't know what this guy looks like now. People tell me that I go to his restaurant a lot, and people tell me he's in there all the time. I don't know what he looks like.
Smart way to
And that's kind of like, right, so it's kind of like Bellomo, where, you know, there's very few photos of him out there of, you know, what he looks like, not in 1992.
I always got a kick out of when Google Maps caught him on
with a pizza
Avenue in the Bronx when he's picking up the pizza. But Lucchese crime family is our final one. And I'm fascinated by them because they'll still, I mean, the feds will still say that the boss listed is Victor Amuso.
Is Victor Amuso in prison.
But if we remember in 2017, a lot of people, I don't know if they know this, but he allegedly sent a letter to Stephen Crea stating that, you know, Mike DeSantis is now the guy.
Yes. So it was I think I said this when we first started talking about the New York crime families. It was a bloodless coup. And that would have never, you know, that really speaks to where the mafia is, and for good and for bad. I mean, I think that diplomacy has its role and was clearly it didn't break out into violence. And he wasn't, Amuso was not putting the word out to a couple of nobodies to step aside. I mean, he was telling Matty Madonna and Stevie Boy, Wonder Boy Crea that, you know, your time on top is over with. And some of it had to do with that they were both headed to prison anyway. But, you know, in another era, I don't necessarily see Matty Madonna and Stevie Crea going quietly into the night like that so easily. Amuso put in a whole brand new administration, put in Big Mike DeSantis as boss, Patty Red, Dela Russo as underboss, who's a younger guy, and Andrew DeSimone, who was another kind of relatively younger guy, as consigliere.
A fascinating look into the mafia right now. I'd still could say the mob is still alive and well. It's remained to be seen where it will be in years from now, 10 years or so. A lot of guys will get out. I'm sure the things will change, but it is still a fascinating thing to talk about. And Scott Bernstein does it at one of the highest levels. You can find him at the Gangster Report. You can find him on the original Gangsters podcast with Jimmy Bucciolato, great guy there. Scott, what do you got going on, and where can the listeners find you elsewhere?
Yeah, so yeah, get my Gangster Report. Check out Gangsters, original Gangsters podcast, anywhere you consume podcasts. Most of our consumption comes from Apple and Spotify. I have a couple of entertainment, television, and film projects that are in the works that I'm excited about. One I've been working on, I think I've talked about it on your live show, I've been working on the last year or so, the Black Mafia Family show on the Starz Network. First scripted season one of the scripted show was a big hit back in the fall. They're in the process of putting the finishing touches on season two, which will probably premiere in late 22, early 23. And then we have a docuseries that's going to be like the real story behind the scripted, that's going to buffer between season one and season two. So that should be out at the end of the summer. And it's an 8-episode docuseries with myself and a lot of original Black Mafia family members, including Big Meech. And Big Meech is heavily involved in the docuseries. And I'm one of the kind of threads that helps tell the story through those 8 episodes. I'm kind of the main talking head that wasn't involved in BMF. And then you have Big Meech as the talking head that was BMF. So I'm really excited to see that come out on Starz probably in August. So keep an eye out for that. And then at the end of July, I have a History Channel project that will be coming out on the Jimmy Hoffa anniversary, which will be July 30th. Will be 47 years since Jimmy Hoffa disappeared. And it looks like there's going to be another dig between now and then in New Jersey. And I will be on hand, and the History Channel will be recording it. And then they'll be putting it out as a 90-minute special come July 30th.
Very cool. Just before we go, I did want to touch on one piece of news before we wrap up. I'll get your quick thoughts on it here. Interesting news out of Italy. According to the Italian newspaper, Cosimo Di Loro has died. A lot of people will be and wonder who that is. But when I tell you who it is, you'll know who it is. If you've ever seen the show Gomorra, Cosimo Di Loro is the inspiration of Gennaro Savastano. Now, Di Loro was serving a life sentence for his role in being the boss of the former clan that his father ran in Segondoliano in Naples, the Camorra, basically. They ran the largest open-air drug market in Europe. It is still here to this day. They would get into a war with a splinter group that had broken off and tried to seize power. If we remember, Mr. Di Loro was integral in killing a young woman, Gelsomina Verde, just an awful individual, a terrible person.
I think he deserved
to die in prison. What's up, Scott?
I could be wrong. I definitely do not consider myself an expert on Sicilian mafia affairs, but I think he also served at least partially as an inspiration for the character on the show 000.
000, absolutely.
Which is with Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah, 000 is based around your obviously Sicilian mafia. Gomorra is based around the Camorra in Naples. Two different groups, but
okay. Well, yeah,
you're dead right. I enjoy both shows. Cosimo is just an interesting character. You know, always had a woman on his arm, good looking guy. Kind of always was very out there and very flashy. Kind of the opposite of his father. And if you've ever seen the show Gomorra, it makes sense. But
yeah,
he passed away today at the age of 49. Again, someone that deserved to die a more miserable death than the one I'm sure he did die with. But just some news as we wrap up. Scott, always great talking to you. This was a great show that I knew we had to do with you. We'll have to get you on a lot quicker than 60 episodes from now.
Absolutely, man. And we're going to have you on the OG podcast. We're going to be another thing I want to tease for people. We're going to be launching our YouTube soon, having a much bigger presence across all the social media platforms, kind of taking our OG podcast to the next level. So we want to have you and the sit down involved as much as we can. And that should be happening soon, so look for that.
Well, I look forward to it. I love both you guys, and you're one of my favorites in the game. Thanks for coming on, Scott. I'll talk
Thanks,
to you
Jeff. Soon.
Appreciate it. Right, and as always, guys, thank you for listening. I do appreciate it. As I said, if you enjoy the show, please give us a follow on Twitter at the Sit Down 7. A little bit of a longer show today, but I know most of you enjoy the longer shows. Next week, we will have another great show here on a Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time here on the Sit Down.